Welcome to the Law and Liberty podcast of the Chalcedon Foundation. I'm your host, Andrea Schwartz, and today I have with me Martin Salbretti, the Vice President of Chalcedon, and he's going to be talking about a recent piece that was published on our Chalcedon website about a topic that really includes the idea of the reconstruction of all areas of life, and in this case, medicine, and what happens when somebody ventures out to apply the faith to their life and their calling. So, Martin, thanks for joining me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
So this article, which is entitled Massachusetts Protects Medical Industrial Complex, Derails Pioneering Revolution in Addiction Medicine. Now, that's not really theology per se, and people who are familiar with your writings and have heard you lecture would say that Martin Salbretti is the quintessential person to really explain R.J. Rushdoony's theology and the application of it. This article was much more like an investigative reporter, so why don't you explain why you specifically and Chalcedon in general decided to pursue this topic?
Yeah, that's actually a very good question. How is it that this particular story intercepted Chalcedon? The answer is that Dr. Kishore, who's at the center of the story, he happened to attend one of the Law and Liberty events in Massachusetts, and he came to understand, as we were speaking, that we were committed to the concept of biblical totalism, of full-size worldviews, and the importance of the Christian faith animating every element of that worldview. And this attracted him to us because he realized that his approach to medicine was exactly that. It was an implementation of totalism, of a total worldview, and it was not a fragmented or reductionist approach. It was not humanistic in its orientation, and it was revolutionary in how it approached these things. He saw that we were sober in our approach to these matters, and he gave us, in essence, the exclusive scoop, if you want to call it that, on this story. In other words, he trusted people who were willing to take the Bible at its word. No one else got the story. He gave it to us. And that was his call, but he came to understand that this was the right place to go to tell the story. And I concur, because this represents not so much a deviation from what Chalcedon is talking about, but a rigorous application of what we're talking about. This is exactly what we're all about. The reconstruction of all areas of life, offering solutions. Dr. Kishore was offering a solution that was controversial only insofar as it was successful, more successful than the standard fare that medicine had been essentially dabbling in all this time in trying to solve a very serious problem that confronts a culture that is unloosed from its biblical moorings. And so that's why Dr. Kishore is at the center of a story on Chalcedon's main page. Not because it's not a theological issue, but because it is a deeply theological issue, and we need to essentially realign people's understanding of how the faith applies to all of life. In this instance, it actually is life-giving insofar as those who are benefited by this approach aren't, again, relapsed into horrible addictions or are statistics in terms of mortality. That's a huge thing, and the revolution that Dr. Kishore brought to bear is exactly that. It's a life-saving thing. It becomes an adjunct, if you will, to the gospel, because one of the elements in what he's doing is to reposition these people in terms of the kingdom of God, in terms of meaning. He saw elements of what Dr. Rushdoony was talking about and saw that the whole essence of a life having meaning, that we don't bear up well without meaning, and that modern addicts often find what we call a death of meaning in their lives, that had to be addressed. And so that's why we put this article out there. And it's very controversial, primarily because of what happened to Dr. Kishore. Why it is that these successes seem to trigger not adulation, but condemnation and attack. And I think we have to face the fact that when this Christian gentleman came under such oppressive burdens from the legal side, it was appropriate to finally tell that story.
It's interesting when you talk about the death of meaning. Of course, Dr. Rushdoony has a book that is called Just That, and the whole concept of addiction and drug abuse and alcohol abuse, as you put it, is such a major point of what's talked about today in terms of crime and unemployment and government welfare and subsidies, that when I read the piece, I was really encouraged to say there are people out there who are taking on problems head on and are not just going along with the standard politically correct idea of, well, we have to do something about our drug problem and everybody is concerned about it. But this man really was doing something, and I encourage the fact that you're going to tell his story.
We have to define the problem, certainly, but we can't leave it there. That's a halfway house. We need to move all the way to solutions. And some of these solutions were arrived at through a very difficult process. He called it doing field epidemiology. In other words, he was working face-to-face and getting involved in the lives of these people to understand what was going on. And he determined these interesting patterns that arose in the first weeks and the months, if you will, of the process of converting them from a reliance on these reality-altering drugs to truth, in a sense, freeing them from delusions and having them grasp and take hold of and embrace something more powerful, which is the truth. Now, a lot of people escape truth because it's an ugly truth in their lives. So we have to deal with that part too. And that does come to light not only in this initial article, but be even more obvious in subsequent parts of the serialized story. Because we're not just finished. This was just the first part of the story. There's so much more to be told than this initial essay, shot out the door, if you will, has to tell. But the essence of all of it is there are answers. They can be put to practical use, and they involve our love for our neighbor as ourself. It's a practical implementation of that. And I think Calcedon is well positioned to be able to say, this is why this is working. We can call the shots on that insofar as analyzing why it is that this approach works. Well, it's holistic. It treats man as a complex, composite individual. It doesn't try to reduce him to just his feelings or the things that might animate him, his affectations and whatnot. It sees human beings as moral beings that need meaning, that they're made in the image of God, and we can appeal to that, and we can work through that. And I think that's what makes this such a huge story insofar as the work that's being done by Dr. Kishore. The other part of the story is, why is it that this tremendous achievement has essentially been attacked and derailed so completely in the state of Massachusetts, when in fact it should be replicated across the country? I think Calcedon's in a good position to at least expose the light of day to what that process was that derailed this work, and then try to essentially put it back on a firmer foundation than it initially had. We can do everything we can in our power to get Dr. Kishore's model, so-called Massachusetts model, into play elsewhere. And I think if people have ears to hear, they're going to be able to apply their faith in extremely practical ways that heretofore we didn't have any options for. We just assumed that the big pharmaceutical companies and the existing paradigms in addiction medicine had the final word on what we can do, and it wasn't a very good word. It was a marginal solution at best, and it was a very high-tech, pricey one. And the truth of the matter is, all these solutions were actually running away from the reality that the addicted individuals were facing, especially in their first month of treatment. And that's where Dr. Kishore's work is so revolutionary.
Obviously, in a conversation, you're not going to be in a position to say everything that was included in the article.
No.
And so I would encourage listeners to read the article. To summarize, Dr. Kishore had a model that said it's crucial to approach people in the first month as they're trying to recover from their addiction, and that each week of that first month needs to focus on a particular aspect of the individual. Why don't you sum up the 4 weeks?
In the first week, he says it's the body that's calling the addict back into relapse. And what he needs to do is extinguish all the elements in the body's call. Most people talk about the so-called traditional symptoms of withdrawal, the nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, etc. That's not the thing that normally is the problem. There's a special set of symptoms called part of the post-acute withdrawal syndrome. This involves sweating and restless leg syndrome, other aspects of how you feel. And he addressed that. That was actually calling people back to relapse more so in many respects than the primary symptoms that everyone hears about. No one was dealing with the post-acute withdrawal symptoms, what we call PAWS, that acronym PAWS. Well, he studied it. He said, oh, why is it that these people are sweating? How do we control that? He found out that doctors in Hollywood had been prescribing Rubinol for actors under hot cleat lights so they wouldn't sweat. So he prescribed that, and that would control the sweating. he prescribed Repinol to handle the issue of, say, restless leg syndrome, etc. So he's able to quiet the body's call back to the addict, and that takes the first week. The second week, the addict's mind, after detoxing to that point, starts to call him back. He starts to play games with himself. He wants to rationalize. He wants to essentially ride the tiger on the principle that the only safe place around a tiger is on its back. And so they attempt to see how they can control the substance that controlled them. And they're essentially making promises that they can't keep to themselves. This is where a peer group that's been there, done that, acts to humble them so they can acknowledge they are helpless in the face of this situation. They need the help. They need to acknowledge that they cannot, in fact, play games like take a little piece of a pill or draw lines with the grease marker on a bottle of liquor. That's important, and so that interaction there gets us past the second week. The third week, the social network that was part of the what we call the drug ecosystem around the addict triggers all sorts of actions because it tries to pull the addict back into the orbit of the entire enterprise of which he was a part, you know, the dealers, the lookouts, all that, he was a part of that. And so Dr. Kishore works overtime to separate and sever the addict from the social network that is trying to pull him back into the addiction. There's a very dangerous cycle because there's a lot of rage and wrath. And because, so from the point of view of the drug ecosystem, the addict who's going through detox is a traitor. He's betrayed the system. And in fact, he's at risk of potentially all the way to being killed for it. So a very serious time. That fourth week, once we get past that, what happens is that after 3 weeks of sobriety, the addict suddenly sees themselves as they really are. Now the spirit is calling them back. You know, join me in hell or join me in heaven. Suicide looms upon the horizon. And because now they see themselves as they really are, under the influence of a drug, they had a false sense of reality and they didn't see all their problems. But now that they're sober, reality looks like a curse to them. So their identity, have an identity crisis. And so his model deals with that identity crisis. And he does what we call values injection, if you want to call it that. And the purpose there and the timing is important. First, it's necessary because if we don't do that, then they'll adopt for themselves a new identity, like being a pimp or a loan shark operative. You want to catch that in the bud, nip that in the bud, and give them a useful identity, which involves a job, vocation. In other words, working with their hands. There's a very interesting element of biblical dominion involved in there. When men work, then they find meaning in their lives, and they see themselves. So instead of looking at the mountain of problems that were covered up by the drug, like, oh my goodness, I have a huge student loan debt I'll never pay. Now they're able to confront reality and grapple with it and to fight those battles and win. And so that's what the fourth week is about. In the subsequent articles, we'll talk about what happens for the entire first year. It's even more interesting as to how we were able to do what he calls sobriety maintenance and then pass the one-year mark, sobriety enhancement. But all these elements are important because in the standard model of medicine, they already have an 80% relapse rate by the end of the first month. So they basically threw 4 out of 5 people under the bus, considering that a natural amount of collateral damage. And Dr. Kishore says that's not acceptable. We need to see what's going on in that first month. And he's the first one who analyzed the first month of treatment into the 4 phases that the addict actually faces. So when modern medicine puts someone through a 28 or 30-day rehab, essentially all it's doing is postponing that day of judgment where the addict still must go through those 4 phases, and they're ill-prepared for it. They have a false sense of security because I finished my program. I'm ready to go out in the world. No, they're not. They have been ill-prepared because modern medicine used a very fragmented approach to deal with the matter. They figure that they have a hammer, every problem's a nail. But humans are much more complex than that, and Dr. Kishore has given us a solution that works, and it just leaves the other programs in the dust in terms of how effective it is. It's astonishing how well his program is doing. Revolutionary, in fact, especially after the first month, where the normal programs, the methadone, the suboxone methodologies, usually leave a huge recidivism rate, like I said, 80% high or more in that first month. That's tragic, and Dr. Kishore's model does not suffer from that kind of approach. He works miracles, essentially, in that first month.
So he got on somebody's scope because the course of action that, quote-unquote, the authorities took was to make it so that they slandered him, they froze his assets, they basically attempted to shut him down.
Yeah, they effectively did shut him down. He had 52 centers across the state of Massachusetts. He went where the problems were. For example, in Weymouth, he had two centers because of the extreme drug abuse in that area, because he was trying to help these people. And essentially, the attorney general, from what I can tell, has trumped up a whole bunch of charges that have no basis in fact. I think this accounts for the amount of times that the prosecution, has postponed going to trial because they didn't really have anything to go with. But they were able to demonize this man. He wears a GPS bracelet, cannot leave the state without informing anyone. He's cyberbullied, horrendous charges against him in the internet press, alleging, for example, that he's a registered sex offender. I had to look that up to confirm that that was a fraud, just because we needed to be sure that we could proceed with this. And that's awful. That's ugly to have to do that. But I was not surprised to learn that that was simply a slander and a libel. Technically, it's even against the law, but I don't see anyone lifting a finger to prosecute or find out who's doing that. They look the other way, from what I can see, to allow this man to be slandered and destroyed. Basically, they're claiming that he was guilty of bribery and Medicaid fraud, except that everything he was doing is legal. That's why I think the case is being postponed, and they're trying to come up and cook up more indictments to try to destroy him. That's where the subsequent articles in the series are going to get into the more details about the methods that he uses and the successes he has. He's treated over 250,000 people in Massachusetts. And then we'll take a look at what the response is on the other side. I think we need to rally around someone who has a solution like that, who's applying this and applying it in terms of a Christian worldview. I think that's huge. I think everything we can do to help, and one way is certainly to shed some light into some very dark corners of what's going on in the state of Massachusetts.
Well, from what I read in your piece and hearing you talk, I imagine that the doctor needed a huge support structure, because if you're talking about hand-holding an addict for the first month, and it sounds like that's what it is, that he not only had people, but that he had people that he obviously had trained to be able to carry forth the program.
Absolutely true. Because there are 20 different disciplines involved in addiction medicine, it doesn't reduce to two or three that normal models seem to be focused on. He hired the extra individuals, and he also made sure that his support teams were available 7 days a week. The government support teams don't operate that way. They are not open 7 days a week for you to access. He treats them as his friends. He doesn't even like the term patients, because he wants to be their friend and he wants to help them get their lives back on track, and that they can be productive, and that they arrive at a place that would have been impossible under the normal state-funded programs that currently are the prevailing orthodoxy. Or enforced orthodoxy, perhaps, is a better word, because, in effect, he's kicking over some rice bowls, because he's effective at doing this job, even with all that extra personnel doing all that work, at a lower price than the existing systems, which do a relatively miserable job in comparison. And because the existing models don't look well when compared to what Dr. Kishore is doing, I think something had to give. And that's why the shock is, instead of this being resolved in the matter of medical clinical studies and trials, was resolved by force. The only one actually arguing that we should look at how well the disease systems compare against each other is Dr. Kishore. He says we need to have sobriety be the benchmark for success. And using that benchmark, he's the successful one and the existing systems are not, because this exposes the weakness in the current highly funded systems that are highly profitable. I think that may well have been a motivating factor in what ultimately happened to him. It's hard to account for some of the vitriol outside of the notion that he represented a threat of some kind to somebody, and therefore his constituencies are circling the wagons and protecting themselves. And I think that's unfortunate, but in this case, the weak might be confounding the strong, and that's just the way it's going to play out, I think. We're going to see some very interesting things happening as a result of this case.
You know, it sort of reminds me of the success of homeschooling. People who homeschooled never said, give us our property taxes back. They just went about their business. People were actually taking their taxes. But you know what? We want to do it this way. And the public school machinery said, we've got to stop it. And the success of homeschooling is obvious. And now attacks are that the children aren't socialized. They're not in with the program as to how to be good socialized citizens. And maybe, just maybe, the traditional therapies for addiction were never really meant to cure the addict.
In fact, this story goes back to the foundations of medicine in America, to Benjamin Rush, who was one of the first to actually study this problem. Martha Washington's work with the Washingtonian foundations or societies. They actually had a much better handle on this than we do today. What actually happened in the last 40 years is a focus on individual narcotics that substitute for the addictive substance. And I think that's where we made the mistake. I think this was driven by pharmaceutical considerations and not with the holistic approach. Remember what I said at the beginning, the tendency with the modern medicine is if you have a hammer, everything's a nail. But human beings are not nails. They're much more complex than that. So if our goal is to get these people back out of the drugs and back interfacing with reality and with a worldview that is a true one, not a delusional one, and restore and save these lives and get them in a position where they could even have the benefit of the spiritual input that Dr. Kishore brings into the table. He works with a lot of churches in Massachusetts because they work hand in hand on that issue of the new identity, if you want to call it that, the spiritual side, the spiritual vacuum that must be filled before the addict does it for himself in a very negative way by taking on a job that is going to be a big deficit for himself and for society. Because a lot of these people essentially are driven out of the free market jobs because they have records, for example. In fact, that's one of the ways that a lot of these drug social constructs stay together. They make sure that people cannot accept a job on the free market. They can only accept a job within the constellation of the drug ecosystem, as Dr. Kishore calls it.
In getting to know the man, did you ever find out why he had such a calling to help those in addiction? Because this is more than a job for him. This is obviously a ministry, and he's taken a hit for trying to help people. Did you ever find out what motivated him?
I think love for his fellow man is at the bottom of it. And it reminds me of the tales of the missionaries who show up in places where we have horrendous degradation, like women and children passed out in England, in Newcastle, I think, if I recall the story, in the gutters, drunk on rot-gut wine or whiskey. That's the kind of thing that when you see this horrendous devastation of human souls, I think a man who cares will reach out. He will not turn his back or say, this is a problem the government needs to fix. He felt that he was being equipped to go in here and find out how to fix it, how to help these people, how to put them back on their feet. They've stumbled horribly, and they're going to be kept in a stumbled state because of where they are. And he wanted to essentially be part of that salvation process, physical salvation, yes, but also a social salvation, ultimately a spiritual salvation, the most important of all. I think that's an important element there, that spiritual point, because he says this, we cannot do values injection. We can't talk to them necessarily about Jesus Christ or what thing, anything like that. When they're in the throes of detox, they're not going to listen at that point. But if you come with that message too late after the fourth week is done, they've already adopted their new identity. It's too late at that point. So you can't do it too early or too late because you need to take into account what these people are actually going through. So a good word in due season is what we're talking about, and he brings that to bear. And he does it holistically with a worldview that is totalistic in its approach. He deals with all those 20 different elements, all those 20 different disciplines, as complex as they are. You'll read about them in the story. And he brings them all to the table without minimizing any of them. Nothing's given short shrift. The complexity of what it means to be human is taken into account by Dr. Kishore because he knows that's the only way to help these people. And so his outreach is huge.
Now, do churches in the area, have they been supporting him in the oppression he's been under?
Quite a few have, yes.
Is there any place people can go, besides reading your article, to find out more, to find out ways they might help, to find out ways they might model what he's doing in their own communities?
What we plan to do is put some web links up with the second article, which should be out in the next week or two, so that people can get a handle on what's going on. It appears that the Wikipedia article about him was struck down at the time that the actions against him reached their peak in September of 2011, which is a kind of an unusual thing to have happen, that nobody has any way to know about him except what the Attorney General is telling you. That's kind of a shocking thing. We don't get to hear about all his contributions, that Harvard Medical School looked at his program in 2008 and was impressed with it, that he was essentially considered one of the fathers of addiction medicine and had received rewards from the Boston Celtics. We don't hear about any of that stuff. We don't hear about all the success stories. Essentially, all we know is that he was some thug that we finally caught, and we're going to shut him down. And that's a story that's being officially told, and so Kelsey's not willing to stand by without offering the truth to stand up against that representation.
And I think it goes back to sort of where we started, that Chalcedon serves a really important function in our culture today. And just the fact that an event was taking place in Massachusetts talking about the correlation and the necessity of law and liberty together, that it actually drew a personality like Dr. Kishore and then opened up the possibility for you to find out about something that you wouldn't have known about otherwise.
That's correct. It's amazing how God opens these doors. As the scripture says, they're wide open and effectual. In this particular instance, God knows what he's doing.
All right. Well, Martin, thank you. And I hope, listeners, you will check out the Chalcedon website to read this article, and that we'll look forward to more information about this whole situation. And Martin, we'll have you on again to talk about the next couple of articles that you end up writing.
Excellent.
Join us again next time for another edition of the Law and Liberty Podcast.